The monologue.
Not much of the public health guidance that's being offered right now, and really for the last several months, has been able to stand up to reasonable scrutiny. And I focus on reasonable because I think we have to be reasonable. And I think it's reasonable, for example, to point out that there are some public health officials right now pushing for a return to masking in a way that doesn't quite make sense. Some of them want mask mandates. Others want stronger language before we get to the mask mandates. For example, Dr. Chris Spitters, the health officer for Snohomish County, talking to Como TV, he falls into that category.
I would kind of upgrade it from a recommendation to a request at this point to mask up indoors and to have our proprietors support that in their settings.
But what if they don't? Well, then he says, yeah, we need mandates. So in other words, he says, if you don't do what we ask, we will then just demand it. Okay.
If we're unable to achieve it voluntarily, then you know, to protect hospital capacity and our ability to take care of COVID and all the other problems that need to come into hospitals, we might need to take that further step.
So here is some reasonable scrutiny in my view. And again, I want to focus on reasonable scrutiny. If a mask prevents the spread of COVID, which, by the way, now even a former Biden official says it doesn't, but if a mask effectively prevents the spread of COVID, were you wrong before mandating 25% occupancy in a business? Was that necessary? Because right now, they're not saying go back to 25% capacity or 50% or even 75%. They're not talking about capacity, are they? You're not hearing about that on buses or restaurants or gyms or movie theaters or schools. Full capacity, but wear a mask. So then before, should we have foregone the 25% capacity? And if not, why aren't you saying we should return to smaller capacity now? We have right now a variant that spreads COVID way faster than the regular COVID strain that we dealt with last year. So why is it that you're only talking about masks and nothing else? We never get an answer. We never get an answer on specific questions like that. I imagine they're going to try to spin it by saying, well, we got the vaccine now. Yeah, exactly, which is why we shouldn't go back to masks. It is absurd.
The interview.
Good news in the Seattle City Council race for Sarah Nelson. She is going to take on Nikita Oliver, a socialist, someone who is a police abolitionist, and in Sarah Nelson, someone who is a small business owner. She actually knows what it's like to work and live in Seattle and deal with all of the nonsense. And she joins me on the line. Sarah, congratulations on the early results.
Thank you very much.
So you're going to head on and take on Nikita Oliver. Everyone sort of expected this. I don't think people expected the results. The polling seemed to indicate the opposite, that Nikita Oliver was going to go into the general with the higher vote tally. So what do you think the results say about the election moving forward?
Well, I think the results say that people want change. And, you know, you don't hear a lot about how the broad base of Seattle really feels in some polls and some stories, but I tapped into it and I feel strong going into the general.
What we're hearing from Nikita Oliver is essentially she's the candidate who's not going to suck up to the big corporations, which is a curious point of view because, number one, we don't have that many big corporations that we're really talking about in the grand scheme of things. And number two, it seems to indicate that you would, but it feels like more so you're actually going to respect small businesses, which make up the bulk of the Seattle jobs.
Exactly. 70% of the jobs in the private sector are in small businesses. And the business community is an ecosystem anyway. We shouldn't be talking about big or large, but in fact, I do have a base of support among small business. And these are they form the fabric of our neighborhoods, spur innovation. And we absolutely need to take care of small businesses and the workers that work there.
Obviously, Nikita Oliver, as a police abolitionist, wants to go further than just simply defunding the police. From your perspective, do you think the SPD needs to increase its fund, or would you support either staying the course or cutting?
We need to bring staffing levels back up so that when police respond to high response calls or even any calls, people don't have to wait 14 minutes, yep. which is the average response time for priority one.
And that's just priority
so
one.
My answer to you is, we need to, good policing very well might cost more money than bad policing. So we need to make sure that our police force is adequately staffed.
What does adequately staffed mean? When you look at the staffing numbers, do you lean on the SPD to tell you that, or do you lean on sort of like sister cities?
No, I lean on how many people left the force last year. I think it was 196. That on top of council abrogating, I think it was 12 positions, permanent mm-hmm. positions, and also eliminating staffing resources from some of the places that even the community, broad-based, thinks is what we need to do to strengthen our community policing model. So I'm looking at the numbers reported by SPD and also the numbers in council budget actions that are, continuing to cut our police.
Tied to the issue of policing is obviously crime, and tied to crime is, families feeling like this is a city for them. What can be done at a council level if you're on the council to make it more family friendly here?
Well, when it comes to crime, unfortunately, that is something that we're going to have to work with the city attorney on. But basically, I think first and foremost, council sends the message that public safety is important. And we will put adequate resources and attention to ensuring that everyone feels safe and that this is a good place to raise a family, start a business, visit, et cetera. So it starts with, a tone and a set of priorities put forth by council. And then we work with the executive and the city attorney mm-hmm. to make sure that crime is taken seriously, et cetera.
So obviously on the Seattle City Attorney front, as of right now, and things could change, it looks like it would be Ann Davison going into the race against Nicole Thomas Kennedy, who is, again, here's the theme, not only a police abolitionist, but also a jail abolitionist, someone who says she would stop prosecuting misdemeanors. So how much do you see the future of the city not just being about the council, but also about the Seattle City Attorney's office?
I think what we're seeing now is Seattle voters seeing alternatives, finally.
Yeah.
And, I believe that Ann's got a tough race, but, the people, when they come back from summer break and they tune in, we're talking about the general, and when they tune in and hear that Ann is offering some pragmatic policies to lead our city forward, it could very well be that she picks up momentum, and I expect that she will. So my race is a sign of that, as is the mayoral race. And so I think that there's reason to hope.
Last question for you. Would you offer a pledge to the audience that if you're elected, and we know you're a Democrat, and, we're not going to really get conservatives on the council, but are you going to pledge to not fall really far to the left as some candidates have once they get on the council, that they just sort of immediately drift into that progressive socialist zone?
I pledge that. That will not happen with me. I'm running to represent all Seattle. My core values right now will be the same in 4 years, and I will be responsive to the political spectrum.
Good. That's what we're looking for. And certainly, again, Democrats and Republicans don't always get along or agree on everything, but there's a lot to like about Sarah Nelson's campaign. And just keep in mind that if you don't go with Sarah Nelson, you end up getting Nikita Oliver. I'll give you the last word.
Well, basically, what I want to say is that I'm not running because I'm a career politician, and I'm not running, to be worried about my next election. I have a job that I like. I'm running to get Seattle on the right track. And so I'm not going to go do the whole sort of herd mentality and just fall in line. What you see is what you get.
Love it. And that's why I voted for you. And that's why I encourage everyone, as we get into the general, make sure you're voting for Sarah Nelson for City Council. Her website, sarahforcitycouncil.com. It's all spelled out, S-A-R-A-F-O-R, citycouncil.com. Sarah Nelson, thank you so much for stopping by. I'm sure you'll be back in the coming weeks.
Thanks, Jason. Bye.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Now this.
The monologue.
Not even COVID will stop the Puyallup Fair from moving forward.
We're continuing to follow CDC recommendations and guidelines. And so what that means is we are going to put on our party for everybody. We're going to obviously continue to always do it in a safe way to welcome people back.
That is Puyallup Fair spokesperson. Yes, I said Puyallup Fair. No, I won't say Washington State Fair. That's stupid. That's the spokesperson, Stacey Van Horn. She was speaking to Cairo 7 TV. They say, look, we're going to do things safely as humanly possible. We're checking with the health department regularly to make sure if there are any new protocols, we know about it. But we're going to move on.
We are the largest fair in the smallest city. We have a huge economic impact right here in Puyallup and across the state.
So the fair starts on September 3rd. It goes through September 26th. They've got the concert series coming back. You've got the Steve Miller Band. You've got Carrie Underwood. I should have led with her because that's way more interesting than Steve Miller. They've got what they normally have. Salt and Pepper. What?
That's the one that gets you?
Salt and Pepper. Really? They're still doing stuff?
Are they okay. With somebody else too?
Ice Cube? He still performs?
Ice Cube does everything to
Sublime.
Stay relevant.
That can't be true. Didn't both of their lead singers die? In any case, they've got a whole bunch of people coming. They say they're going to have more hand sanitation stations. And so, first of all, it's a fair. You're going to get dirty.
Yeah, fairgoers aren't going to get in line for hand sanitizer.
The time for hand sanitation and better hygiene stations, probably 2 decades ago for the fair. Just throwing that out there. Number two, it's almost entirely outdoors. What are we doing here pretending that this is a big deal? Oh, well, the Delta variant. Okay, well, if you're concerned about getting the Delta variant, guess what? Don't go to the fair. Don't go to the outdoor fair, where it's probably going to rain anyway, during the Macklemore concert. Macklemore. I mean, that was kind of a thing like 5 years ago. Not anymore.
Can't wait to hear Thrift Shop.
Oh, Darius Rucker. I'm in. I'm in for Darius Rucker. It's Hootie.
With the Blowfish?
No, it's just him.
Just Hootie?
Yeah, it's just Hootie.
Where are the Blowfish?
They died. The top of the aquarium, upside down. They got COVID. It was very sad. You know, look, again, we have to go on with our lives. If you're vaccinated, you are protected. If you are in a demographic that's not going to be hit that hard by COVID, you're fine. Just between petting the pigs and eating that monster, what's the burger called again?
Earthquake burger.
I should have just went with a scone. I knew that preference. Just make sure you're washing your hands.
The interview.
Not shockingly, Chris Cuomo is a media coward who decided not to talk about his brother's scandal, one that could actually lead him into not just a forced resignation or an impeachment, but maybe even jail time. Joining us on the line to talk about the media's reaction to Governor Cuomo is Curtis Houck. He's the managing editor of Newsbusters. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you, Jason.
I think for the first time in a long time, people actively chose to tune in to Chris Cuomo on CNN last night to see how he would respond to not just the allegations against his brother, but the fact that kind of seems like he was played an important role in crafting the way his brother, the governor, responded to the accusations prior to this investigation. Were you shocked?
Yeah, I have not seen the ratings yet for Cuomo primetime, but I'm guessing it was probably their highest in years. You know, there were so many people tuning in. It reminded me of Rachel Maddow when she claimed that she had Donald Trump's tax returns, and then it really ended up being nothing. This is like Al Capone's fault. But the thing is, I think a lot of us weren't expecting him to talk about it at all. But what was so funny about that last night, Jason, was the moment his show ended and the handoff, the buddy-buddy thing with Don Lemon ended, as soon as Don Lemon said goodbye, I love you, brother, he started talking about Governor Cuomo again. That's how you know that this is all a joke here. So he's allowed to cover his brother and talk about his brother anytime he wants when the charade is on and the fix is in. But the moment something goes wrong, he's not allowed to talk about it. But instead, he spent all of last night talking about how Ron DeSantis is killing people. And he also talked about mental health and the need to respect and love people and treat people with decency in reference to Simone Biles and the Capitol police officer who committed suicide. So it's some really sick stuff that he kind of pounded his chest and talked about morality and loving others. And
if he wasn't such a hypocrite in all of this and so insufferably holier than thou, I think people would give him a little bit more of a pass. If you, you know, take aside his role in sort of crafting some of the messaging here, one could reasonably say in response, look, it's his brother. He didn't want to believe any of it. I would have done the same thing in his position. But it's just that he's been so insufferable. And I think that's what the pushback is about.
Exactly. And we did a study recently for at Newsbusters at the end of June and found that this thus far this year, we've only found about 100 minutes of coverage prior to the scandal. We had 2 minutes on ABC, CBS, NBC in January, 16 in February, 82 in March, but then nothing about Andrew Cuomo in April, May, and June. In July and then before this scandal broke. So it's been, you know, quite the dead space about where people probably were wondering what happened to this guy. But then again, that, you know, the important reminder and that we've really been making at Newsbusters is CNN enabled this behavior. They enabled it, and now they're trying to cover themselves. And they're devastated. They talked about it being shocking and damning. And they did use the word devastating yesterday. It was almost like a funeral for these people, that one of their own has fallen and that they were shocked that this could have happened to someone that they loved and trusted so much. But for the rest of us, it was right in front of us. And as Tucker said when he opened his show last night, it's always these people you suspect the most that do things like this here. You know, Bill Clinton must have been watching this yesterday and gone, gee, I don't want anything to do with that guy.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, if they're shocked by this, wait until they get the investigation from the DOJ on the policies that killed a bunch of elderly people. Oh, no, sorry. I guess they canceled that. The Biden administration decided to pull the plug on any serious investigation into that. I wonder if they kind of saw this coming and realized they could just, instead of going after COVID, just bury him in this.
Right, exactly. Ron DeSantis, how could he have done such a thing? And really, that's where we see a lot of this. We saw Anna Navarro yesterday bring up Trump into this equation.
Yeah.
She was just one of many leftists that have brought this up. And it shows the depravity of these people, that they can't take each scandal, each situation, you know, separately here. And that's really what you should be able to do in news. You should be able to, yes, put things in perspective, but at the same time, break things down and take each incident separately and analyze the facts as they saw them fit. But again, it was definitely a day of reckoning yesterday that CNN doesn't want to have to deal with, but we'll continue to be on it.
Oh, I love it. That's why you should always check out Newsbusters and read up on all of the nonsense in the media that they're able to uncover thanks to the great work of the staff that Curtis manages. He's the managing editor of Newsbusters, Curtis Houck. Thank you so much for stopping by. As always, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
The website, by the way, newsbusters.org. Make sure you check it out, newsbusters.org. Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Always glad to see Seattle radio host Jason Rantz.
It's always a pleasure to watch you and a pleasure now to host you.
Jason, I just love your coverage of what's been going on in Seattle.
Jason, this is as bad as it gets in America.
Jason Rantz, great to see you. Thank you.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
It's been over a month since Cliff Mass noted that the record heat wave in the Pacific Northwest was not primarily caused by global warming. He didn't say global warming played no role. He said it wasn't the primary reason why we saw the record heat that we did for several days. And yet, we're still noticing that it's bothered the activists over at the Seattle Times. Because yesterday, they decided to print a hit piece against Cliff Mass, calling him out for not having the approved positions on the issue of climate change. Joining me on the line is the controversial figure, Cliff Mass. Cliff, welcome back to the show.
Thanks a lot. Good to talk to you, Jason.
When you saw this piece in the Seattle Times, First, what did you think?
Well, I knew it was coming because I had talked to the reporter. But it was, unfortunately, what I would call a hit piece, you know, critical of me. They were upset with me criticizing their banner headlines, you know, hyping up, you know, the heat wave. And, you know, basically my disagreement with them and the study they quoted was, you know, basically climate change has made a small contribution to the heat wave, but it was dominated by natural processes. And that's the point I was making, and they were kind of unhappy with me making that point.
Why were they unhappy, do you think?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think, unfortunately, climate change has become politicized. And so what is being done is that any extreme weather event could be flooding, could be heat waves, could be anything. There's this claim that, you know, these events would not have happened without climate change. And it's just not true. And basically, you know, climate change may be revving a few of these things up like heat waves, but overwhelmingly, they're happening because of natural processes. And so people should not necessarily worry that the world is going to end because climate change is tweaking things a little bit worse, but it's not radically changing the nature of our extreme weather.
So I saw, I can't remember who posted this on Twitter, but it was a meme that basically said the last several years, either June or July, was a record-breaking month for heat. They point to that and they say, well, that is proof that it is climate change, because if it wasn't, then why over the last several years have we seen these record increases? So what's your response to that?
Well, it's very easy to answer that. If you plot up the, you know, the record temperatures each year, it turns out there's no upward trend. In fact, during the last decade from 2010 to 2019, there were no temperatures over 100 degrees, for instance. So there's no trend to having more record temperatures during the last several decades, which is actually speaking against global warming being the dominant factor, you know, during the last several decades.
What is determined to be a trend when it comes to weather patterns?
Well, see, weather doesn't, an extreme weather event says nothing about climate. The only thing that says anything is if there's a trend towards more extreme events. And in terms of extreme temperature records, that hasn't been happening. So that's kind of the busted moment for this global warming claim here. Now, don't get me wrong. By the end of the century, if we keep on putting CO2 in the atmosphere, we keep on warming up, we will see more extreme temperature records. But the issue is this last heat wave, you really can't say that. And we would have had a record-breaking heat wave without any global warming at all. So maybe global warming added maybe 1 or 2 degrees.
What is alarming to you in the general sense? What would the data be that gets you to say, okay, this is a serious concern, this is not something that's more natural and could potentially pose an issue for us sooner than later? Because obviously we're not going to end, the world's not ending in 12 years. But what's the data that you would look at to sort of trigger that alarm inside of you?
Well, I'm not only looking at the observational data, what's happened, but I run high-resolution climate models for the region. So I can tell you what I think is going to happen if we keep on putting in the large amounts of CO2. So, I mean, what will happen here? Well, eventually we will see, you know, more extreme temperature records. That's going to occur. The average temperature has been slowly rising, but that's been kind of small. The minimum temperatures are coming up slowly. So, you know, that's going to happen. I think probably one of the biggest impacts we'll see is the snowpack will get less as we get towards the end of the century. So by the time we get past, you know, 2050, the snowpack is really going to start decreasing. And by the end of the century, it might be half of what we have now, maybe even a little bit less. So snowpack will decrease over time. That's a serious issue. All the models suggest that rainfall won't change that much over this century. So we'll still have pretty much the same rainfall, maybe even a little bit more. So there are some areas, more extreme heat, end of the century, less snowpack, end of the century. That's probably going to happen. But at this point, it doesn't look like we have anything major happening in terms of extreme weather due to global warming during this decade and probably the next decade or two.
Cliff Mastery on the line. He's a professor at the University of Washington's Department of Atmospheric Sciences. He's responding to a hit piece in the Seattle Times that ran yesterday by reporter Hal Burton. Was there anything that you think he just got wrong in the piece? Not just the framing in a disingenuous way or a way that was intentional to discount you, but was there anything factual that was just wrong?
Well, he was missing the whole point. I talked to him while he was writing the story. I said, if you want to do a good story, why don't you look at the science of it? I mean, what are the disagreements here? There was this attribution study the Seattle Times had headlined. You know, I pointed out flaws in it. I mean, there's scientific problems with it. Why don't we talk about the science and go through these various points? I said, but he didn't do that. Instead, what he did is try to this person or that person didn't like what I said, and the person that he quoted was one of the authors of the attribution report, you know, that I was criticizing, by the way. And then he even went into my social media when I was talking about other things like riots in Seattle or COVID. They tried to bring that in too. So I told him, you know, we should have stuck to science, or he should have stuck to science. So that's what's wrong. The science wasn't in there. Trying to look at what was going on, it was missing.
It also appears to get your colleague, Nick Bond, who is also a UW professor. He co-teaches a course with you. Feels like they tried to get him to go after you and attack you, and they do quote him. I don't necessarily view it as a criticism of you, maybe a slight disagreement on the data. How do you take it?
No, in fact, that's quoted from this other report. And basically, he didn't say anything about what I was saying.
Yeah.
All he was saying is, you know, and I don't think he looked at it in any great detail, that, you know, the method used by this attribution report seemed reasonable or something like that. So his was basically a non-quote. He quotes from Farron Anslow, who was an individual who was involved with the report itself, and then he quotes a well-known activist scientist, Gavin Schmidt, who is
from NASA.
Way out there.
Yeah.
From NASA. He's infamous for making outrageous claims about climate change. So, you know, if you know the people, you know where this is going.
Yeah, but most people don't know the people. And most people have never heard of Gavin Schmidt unless they happen to run in the same circles. And no one knows who Farron Anslow is other than what they get out of this piece. When you look at this, does it feel like there is a coordinated effort by some to silence you? Is that what you take away from a piece like this? Is that what you think the intent is?
Well, I mean, the Seattle Times has been extremely unhappy with me for a while. And I used to be favored by the Seattle Times for a long time. I was quoted right and left. But then I criticized a major story of theirs when they claimed, it was called Sea Change, when they were claiming that rising levels of CO2 in the atmosphere were killing off the oysters and shellfish in Puget Sound. Well, you know, I did a few blogs basically showing why this was not based on science. And they were extremely upset about that. And ever since then, you know, my relationship with them has been on the rocks. And the other thing is I have in several blogs criticized some of the science that's in the Seattle Times. They have had a tendency to hype and exaggerate climate change and say things that are really very much unfounded. And they've done this time and time again. And so, I mean, it's kind of unfortunate that a major newspaper here in the Northwest is not giving people a fair evaluation of what the science is really saying about climate change.
Last question for you. Are you getting any pushback from the UW?
Oh, not at all. So I've gotten no pushback from the UW at all. So I don't expect to either. I mean, that's one of the nice things about being a tenured professor. You do have the right to express your views frankly without any kind of issues from the university.
Yeah, if you're looking to get fired from a job for expressing a viewpoint people disagree with, you go back and work for KNKX, is that the radio station? Cliff Mass is a very prolific blogger. Everyone should check this out because it actually gives you some
actual details. Whether or not you agree, it's up to you. You can certainly read it. He backs up what he says and actually is willing to have conversations with those who disagree, even when he kind of gets the feeling that they might be running a hit piece. The website is cliffmass.blogspot.com. Cliff Mass, my friend, thank you so much for stopping by. As always, I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Now this.
The Jason Rand Show.
Jason Rantz, Seattle radio host, joins us now.
Jason, you're the perfect guest on this.
Jason Rantz, welcome back, Jason.
I see you often on other programs here.
Jason, what's going on?
Jason, thanks for coming on.
The Quick Hit.
I want to put a bow on an issue that I brought up a little bit earlier last week, and I didn't spend too much time on it. I ended up writing a blog about an experience I had over at the Polyclinic in Seattle on Madison. I think it's the Madison Center Polyclinic. And it's a place that I go and have, up until recently, all of my doctors that I would regularly see. So I have a regular doctor. I have an asthma doctor. I have a dermatologist, for example. And I've never really had any significant issues of note at the Polyclinic. It's always been a little bit of a hassle to get an appointment set up with my asthma doctor because he sees so many patients. But for the most part, my asthma is under control. But for anyone who has asthma, they understand that when it's not under control, it's a serious issue. The feeling of not being able to take a deep breath, where everything you're doing is shallow, where every breath that you take is really difficult, and you feel almost like you're suffocating, like someone is sitting on your chest and you can't really fully live the way you want to live. And over the course of the last 6 weeks or so, my asthma has grown to be pretty uncontrollable, which is new for me, at least recently new for me, in the sense that for the most part, I'm able to control my asthma really, really well. But something changed. Don't know why. I have some suspicions. Don't know why for certain. So I reached out to my asthma doctor over at the Polyclinic, and I asked for some guidance early on. He says, okay, go ahead and do this based on what I told him. And if it doesn't get better, you know, reach out to me and let's get you in. So it didn't get better. And I waited and waited and waited. And I tried to treat it on my own because I've had asthma basically since I was like 12 years old. So generally, I know how to handle it. But it wasn't getting any better, so I decided, okay, I should go and see this doctor. I had my trip to, Tampa coming up for Student Action Summit. So I said, hopefully I can see him before then. So I reached out and I asked for an appointment, telling them, yeah, this is a pretty significant issue. It's not getting any better. They said that they would see me 6 days later. And, you know, 6 days feels like an eternity. And in this case, I wasn't able to do it because it would happen when I was away in Tampa. So I was a little bit annoyed at that point. But what bothered me the most was this rule that the Polyclinic has that mandates I get a COVID test before going in. Before the doctor will see me, I have to get a COVID test. Now, in this case, to go on Monday, they would require me to go get my test on Saturday. So you have to do it 2 days before you see the doctor, which means, especially for those of us who actually have busy schedules, let's just presume for a moment that I wasn't going out of town on that Monday. My schedule is busy, and I will happily rearrange things as best as humanly possible to see my doctor. What I'm not going to do is rearrange things and waste my day or my morning or my afternoon to go get a needless test. I did not need to get a COVID test. You want to know why? Because I don't have COVID. I am vaccinated. I am not doing anything risky. I was asymptomatic. But they wanted me to go and get a COVID test that I thought was unnecessary just to be able to see a doctor so that I might be able to breathe. And I pushed back a little bit. I said, look, I don't want to do that. I'm vaccinated. Can I do an over-the-counter test? The same ones that are not approved by the FDA, but given emergency authorization use, kind of like the, you know, vaccine. And they told me no. I would have to go in and take the very specific test that they would administer, which, by the way, over at the polyclinic, they don't administer the test. They make you do the test in front of them. It might be a technically different test, but it's still a swab of the nose. So I said, no, I'm not going to do it. And I waited, and I didn't get the treatment, and I ended up almost in the emergency room. Instead, I connected with a doctor on a video service that our health insurance provides. The guy gave me the medication that I needed, gave me a little bit of a treatment plan as I find a new doctor. I said, you know what? And I told this to the polyclinic, I am going to get a new doctor. I am done with you guys. If this is the way you're going to treat a patient who is in need because of some hypersensitive, useless rule, then I'm out. And I was told, of course, that, oh no, all the major hospitals and clinics will require this. Well, that's not true, because I found one in my new doctor's office that doesn't require it, that didn't make me schedule an appointment to get a test and then schedule my appointment to see the new doctor. This is absolutely absurd. And the more that I dug into this story, the more angry I was getting. You are requiring me as a patient who has a vaccine to go get a test. Meanwhile, I find out polyclinic staff, they're not all going through mandatory testing. They're not even all vaccinated. In fact, they're not mandating any kind of vaccine. Why? Because it's emergency use authorization, not fully approved by the FDA. They could have done so many different things to accommodate, right? They could have an office that's only for a room in their clinic that's only for the vaccinated. If the doctor is not vaccinated, okay, well, that's on the doctor. If the nurse isn't vaccinated, that's on the nurse. You should be the one who's getting tested. You have a higher risk than I do of catching COVID. You're in a hospital with sick people coming in all day. I'm not. So I got a big, long statement. I printed it all at KTH.com. I hope people will read it, because you know what? We talk about how important it is to put our health first and how all these frontline workers are, they're all heroes. Well, you know what? Sometimes those heroes work for clinics like the polyclinic that I don't think put the patient first. Certainly they didn't, in my opinion, in my case. So I'm saying goodbye to the polyclinic, found a new place to go, and I'm going to be much happier there. Certainly, I hope so. And if not, I'll write an angry blog about it and talk about it on the radio. If you want to read my piece on the polyclinic, go to mynorthwest.com or ktth.com.
The Last Rants.
As I said in the opening of the show, in the first hour of the show, the results in the primary certainly look promising in the city of Seattle. And maybe that's to the surprise of a lot of folks, including myself. Some positive results, certainly giving an indication that people are, in fact, getting upset with the direction of the city, that they are waiting for change. But understand, a couple wins in a primary, or generally liking a result in a primary, doesn't actually mean we're going to win the entire war. We won a battle, but not the war. And so make sure, as we're heading into the general, you're out there and you're backing candidates more so than you did the first time. Because let's be clear, judging by the voter turnout, lots of y'all didn't vote. I can only do so much, and you got to stop complaining about the direction of your community, of your city, of your state, of your country, if you're unwilling to vote. Too many people are still unwilling to vote. I can't change that. I can tell you, and I do tell you, what's on the line. I show you examples of how things are getting so bad and what can be done. But you actually have to take that extra step and not just vote, but make sure that your neighbors are voting, your friends are voting, your coworkers are voting, your family members are voting. A lot is on the line. Things are looking really, really promising. But we have been burned by Seattle before. We've been burned all across the state before. So what are you doing to step up? What do you need to do to step up? I've given you the tools. Now implement them. And that's the Last Rants.